A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been nursing a back injury from hauling boxes during a move, and he's decided this is the perfect origin story for a new persona. Here's what he wrote us.
Oh, I'm already in.
I recently injured my back a bit lifting boxes during a rental move. It'll get better, and if it doesn't, I'll go to the doctor. But as I'm also a 37-year-old and now a father, I thought this would be an ideal jumping-off point to experiment with a new persona for the purposes of social trolling. The personality that, if it could be summarized in a few words or a meme, might be called old-time grandpa. The type that constantly reminds others of their age, drops words like you youngsters into conversations with anybody younger than themselves, and talks about how things were done in their day, when the world was harder and things were more primitive.
The universal sign that someone's about to tell you about dial-up internet.
Of course. Here's the challenge. At 37, I'm a little young to adopt the retirement home personality. But I believe that with some imagination and Herman's tremendous instincts for this sort of thing, it could be pulled off. Give me the usual playboat for attempting social mischief. Phrases to draw up mannerisms and perhaps even a few tactful props. A Zimmer frame might be overdoing it and probably be justifiably perceived as in bad taste and mocking our elders. That's not the goal of this bit. It's to have some fun within the bounds of good taste. Give me your ideas.
Daniel knows me too well. This is persona engineering. We're building a character from scratch for social mischief, and I want to treat this with the seriousness it deserves. We're going to build you a grandpa that's 70% theater, 30% truth, and 100% deniable.
So we've got the raw material. A 37-year-old new dad with a sore back who wants to be a grandpa. Let's figure out what this persona actually is before we start handing out props.
And that's the thing. We need to define what we're building here, because this isn't an impression of an elderly person. That would be the fastest way to make this unfunny and uncomfortable for everyone in the room. What Daniel's describing is a performance of a very specific comedic archetype, the nostalgic exaggerator who weaponizes, back in my day, as a rhetorical device.
It's a meme, not a person.
The back in my day meme is a recognized comedic frame with built-in audience expectations. When you say those four words, everyone in the room already knows the shape of what's coming, an absurdly exaggerated claim about how things used to be harder, simpler, or better. The audience co-creates the bit with you because they already know the trope. You're not inventing comedy from scratch. You're stepping into a role the culture has already written for you.
That's what makes it work at 37. The comedy doesn't come from you being old. It comes from the gap between your actual age and the authority you're claiming. You're 37 complaining about kids these days to someone who's 34. The audience knows you're young. That's the joke.
Right. If an actual 80-year-old says, back in my day we didn't have smartphones, that's just a statement of fact. It's not comedy, it's memoir. But when a 37-year-old says it with theatrical weariness, the absurdity is built in. You're cosplaying a generational grievance you haven't earned yet.
And the back injury is the perfect catalyst. It gives you a physical truth to anchor the whole performance. You're not pretending to be in pain. You actually are in pain from moving boxes. The persona just amplifies that truth into something theatrical.
The truth sandwich technique. Wrap the absurd claim between two true observations, and the whole thing becomes deniable. Your back hurts from lifting boxes. True. Back in my day, boxes were lighter. Absurd. Absurd. You kids don't know what heavy is. Playful. The real pain sells the fake nostalgia.
So the persona isn't I'm elderly. It's, I'm performing a comedic exaggeration of my own future self. You're not mocking grandpas, you're mocking the version of you that will eventually become one.
And that's the ethical foundation we're going to build everything else on. Now let's get into the craft. The phrases, the mannerisms, the props. This is where it gets fun.
I want to start with the phrase arsenal, because words are the cheapest props you can carry. And the key here is deniability. You need a ladder of escalation so you can calibrate based on who's in the room and how well they know you.
Tier 1, the mild stuff. These are your entry points, the lines that could almost be sincere. Back in my day, we called it a soda, not a sparkling water. Back in my day, you bought music, you didn't rent it. Back in my day, if you wanted to know something, you had to remember it.
Those are barely even jokes. They're just observations with a slight nostalgic tint.
That's the point. You're testing the room. If someone laughs, they're in. If someone says you're 37, you shrug and say feels like a lifetime ago and move on. Complete deniability.
Tier 2 is where you start leaning into the character. You youngsters with your... is the classic opener. You youngsters with your QR code menus. Back in my day, the menu was on the wall and you pointed at what you wanted. You youngsters with your streaming services. Back in my day, you missed the show and that was that. No second chances.
The you youngsters frame is powerful because it's clearly theatrical. No 37-year-old sincerely calls anyone youngster. The phrase itself signals this is a bit. It's a wink built into the vocabulary.
And then tier 3, the strong stuff. This is where you go full absurdist. In my day, we didn't have diaper apps. We had a cloth and a guess. In my day, we didn't have GPS. We had a folded map and a prayer. In my day, we didn't have group chats. We called each other on the phone and hung up when we were done. The conversation ended. It was allowed to end.
That last one is actually profound, but we'll save media theory for another episode.
The eye walked uphill both ways. Escalation is its own subcategory. You start with a mundane complaint. Traffic was bad, the line was long, and then you escalate to absurdity. Traffic was terrible. Back in my day, I walked to school, uphill, both ways, in the snow, barefoot. The audience should be laughing at the escalation, not at old people. They're laughing at the audacity of the bit.
And the escalation itself is the joke. Everyone knows the uphill both ways trope. You're not inventing new material, you're playing a greatest hits album, and the familiarity is the comfort food.
So let's talk delivery mechanics. The phrases are only half the performance. The physical cues are what tell the audience this is theater.
The slow head shake is your foundational move. Someone mentions a new app, a new trend, a new anything. You pause, you look down, you shake your head slowly, and then you deliver the line. It tells the audience a complaint is loading.
The distant stare. You look off into the middle distance like you're seeing a past that no longer exists. Maybe a slight squint, then a sigh. Not an angry sigh, a wistful sigh. The I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed. Energy. And then the punchline.
The sigh is crucial. It's the difference between I'm angry at the present and I'm nostalgically bewildered by the present. One is aggressive, the other is theatrical. You want theatrical.
And the oof sound when standing up. That's your physical anchor. Every time you rise from a chair, there's an oof. It doesn't matter if your back actually hurts in that moment. The oof is now part of the character. It's a sound effect that reminds everyone you're playing the role.
The oof is also deniable because you actually did hurt your back. If someone says you're laying it on thick, you say, no, my back genuinely hurts. And it does. The bit is protected by reality.
Now let's talk props. Daniel specifically asked about tactful props and correctly identified that a Zimmer frame crosses the line. So let's build a tier system.
Tier 1, invisible props, voice and body only. These are your workhorses, reading glasses pushed up on your head, even if you don't need reading glasses. A slight stoop when you walk, just enough to be noticeable. The oof when standing. Maybe you rub your lower back absently while listening to someone talk. These aren't props you carry, they're props you are.
The reading glasses on the head is genius because it's pure theater. You don't need them. You're not pretending to have vision problems. You're just wearing them on your head. It's a costume accessory that says, I'm the kind of person who needs reading glasses, without actually claiming disability.
Tier 2, carried props deniable. A worn leather wallet with a chain, a pocket watch, a handkerchief, an actual cloth handkerchief, not a tissue. These are objects that signal old-fashioned without signaling frail. They're aesthetic choices, not medical devices.
The pocket watch is my favorite. Pulling out a pocket watch to check the time instead of looking at your phone is a complete bit in one gesture. It says, I reject your modern timekeeping, without saying a word.
and it's practical. It tells time. You're not carrying a prop that does nothing. You're carrying an actual timepiece that happens to also be a comedic device.
Tier 3, situational props, used sparingly. A cane used only for dramatic effect, never for actual support. You don't lean on it. You gesture with it. You point at things. You tap it on the ground to emphasize a point. It's a wand that looks like a cane.
And this is where the Zimmer frame distinction matters. A Zimmer frame is a medical device associated with genuine frailty and loss of mobility. Using one as a prop would mock the actual experience of elders who need it. It's not theatrical, it's punching down at a real vulnerability. Daniel was right to flag it.
A cane, used theatrically, is different. Canes have a long history as accessories. They were fashion items before they were medical devices. A gentleman carried a cane. It's a prop with cultural permission.
But even then, you use it sparingly. The cane comes out for special occasions. It's not your daily driver. If you're using the cane every day, you stop doing a bit and started building a wardrobe.
So we've got the toolkit. But here's the thing. A hammer can build a house or break a window. Let's talk about where the line is.
This is the part I care about most, because the bit is funny when it's done right and awful when it's done wrong. And the difference is entirely about who the target is.
The bit works when the target is your own exaggerated nostalgia. You're making fun of yourself. The version of you that's prematurely crotchety, the version of you that's already grumbling about kids these days, at 37. The audience is laughing at you, not at elderly people.
The moment the bit becomes, look at how ridiculous old people are, it fails. It fails comedically because it's mean and no one wants to laugh at meanness. And it fails ethically because you're punching at a group that includes people who are actually vulnerable.
So here's the one-way mirror rule. The persona should never be used to mock someone who can't fight back. Never deploy the bit against an actual elderly person. Never use it to dismiss a real elder's experience. And always, always, break character immediately if someone takes it seriously.
If you say, back in my day, we didn't have electric cars, and an actual 70-year-old says, well, I remember when we didn't have seat belts, you don't escalate. You don't try to out-grandpa them. You drop the bit and say, that's interesting, tell me more. The bit serves the social situation, not the other way around.
The grandpa's blessing test. This is your ethical compass. If your actual grandfather, or any elder you respect, would laugh at the bit, you're on the right side. If they'd feel mocked, you've crossed the line. It's that simple.
Imagine you're at a family gathering. You do your, back in my day, we didn't have diaper apps routine. Your actual grandfather laughs. He says he's got you there. You've nailed it. The bit is working.
Now imagine the same scenario, but your grandfather looks uncomfortable. Maybe he shifts in his chair. Maybe he doesn't make eye contact. You failed. The bit should be retired immediately. Not just for that evening, but permanently. If the bit can't pass the grandpa test, it's not a bit. It's a problem.
And this is where social context becomes everything. The bit works best in low-stakes, high-familiarity settings, with friends who know you, at casual gatherings, in group chats where everyone understands irony.
It fails in professional settings. Don't be the guy doing back in my day at a work meeting with people who don't know if you're serious. It fails with strangers who can't read the irony. It fails anywhere. The audience doesn't already know you're 37 and playing a character.
The group chat is actually the ideal medium for this. You have time to craft the line, you can use the perfect phrasing, and you can add a, just kidding, I'm only 37, if the tone doesn't land. Text gives you an editing window that live conversation doesn't.
Which brings us to the exit ramp. Every bit needs a built-in escape hatch, and the old-time grandpa persona needs one more than most, because the stakes are higher if it goes wrong.
The wink is the simplest. You deliver the line, you hold the character for a beat, and then you crack a smile. The smile says, we're playing. It's a release valve for the room.
The self-deprecating exit. Back in my day, we didn't have streaming services. We had 4 channels, and we were grateful. Pause. I'm 37. I'm practicing for my future. That second line does all the work. It names the bit, acknowledges the absurdity, and lets everyone know you're in on the joke.
And then there's the full break. If someone looks confused or uncomfortable, you drop it entirely. I'm kidding, I'm 37, my back just hurts from moving boxes. The bit isn't more important than the person.
The new dad angle actually gives this persona more power than it'd have otherwise. Because fatherhood is a genuine life transition. You are, in a real sense, entering a new phase of life. The old-time grandpa bit is a comedic exaggeration of something that's actually happening.
Back in my day, we didn't have diaper apps. Works because it's true and absurd at the same time. You're actually a new father. You're actually learning how to change diapers. The bit is grounded in real experience, which makes it funnier and more deniable.
Fatherhood gives you a natural audience. Your kid is too young to get the joke, but other parents will. Back in my day, we didn't have sleep tracking apps. We just didn't sleep. Every new parent in the room will laugh because they're living it.
The persona also works as a bonding mechanism with actual older relatives. If you're doing the old-time grandpa bit at a family gathering and your father or grandfather joins in, you think you had it hard. In my day, you've created a moment of genuine intergenerational play. The bit becomes a bridge instead of a wall.
That's the best-case scenario. The bit creates a space where everyone can play. The 37-year-old pretending to be old, the 70-year-old pretending to be ancient, the 20-year-old pretending to be confused by both of them. It's a comedy ecosystem.
We've covered the craft and the ethics. Let's boil this down to what you actually do on Monday.
The pre-flight check. 3 questions before you deploy the bit. 1. Is the audience in on the joke? Do they know you're 37? Do they understand this is a performance? 2. Is the target my own exaggerated nostalgia, not real elders? Am I making fun of myself? 3. Do I have a graceful exit ramp if someone doesn't get it?
If the answer to any of those is no, don't do the bit. Save it for a better room.
The starter kit. Memorize 3. Back in my day lines and keep them in your pocket. 1 mild, 1 medium, 1 strong. Practice the slow head shake and the distant stare in a mirror until they feel natural. Carry 1 deniable prop. The reading glasses on the head is the easiest entry point. And commit to the truth sandwich technique. True observation, absurd claim, playful jab.
Start small. Your first deployment should be the mildest line in your arsenal, delivered to the safest audience. Your spouse, your closest friend, someone who already knows you're ridiculous. Watch their reaction. If they laugh, you've got permission to escalate. If they don't, you've learned something about your delivery.
The golden rule. The bit is a gift of shared absurdity, not a weapon. If it stops being fun for anyone in the room, it stops being the bit. You aren't the bit servant. The bit serves you and the people you're with.
Remember, you're not mocking old people. You're mocking the version of yourself that's already halfway to becoming one. The back pain is real. The nostalgia is fake. The comedy lives in the gap between them.
You got the playbook. But let's zoom out for a second. What's this bit really about?
I've been thinking about this. The old-time grandpa persona is a rehearsal for actual aging. You're 37, you're a new father, your back hurts, you're getting older. That's not a bit, that's biology. The persona lets you try on the role before it fits. It's a way of making peace with the fact that someday you won't be pretending.
That's actually kind of beautiful. The bit is a coping mechanism dressed up as a prank.
Every joke about getting old is a tiny negotiation with mortality. You laugh at the thing so it doesn't scare you as much. The old-time grandpa bit is just that negotiation, performed in public, with props.
The real question is, what happens when the bit becomes too convincing? When people actually start treating you like an old man? Is that a win or a failure of the performance?
That's the paradox. If you do the bit well enough, eventually someone will take you seriously. A stranger will offer you a seat. A younger person will call you sir with genuine deference. And in that moment, you have a choice. Do you take the win, or do you break character and admit you're 37?
I think you take the win for about 3 seconds, and then you break character. Because if you don't, you've stopped doing a bit and started deceiving people. And deception was never the point.
The point was always the shared laugh. The moment where everyone in the room realizes you're 37 and complaining about kids these days, and the absurdity lands. That's the moment the bit exists for. Everything else is just scaffolding.
Daniel, you've got your playbook. 3 phrases, 1 prop, a head shake, and a grandpa who'd laugh at the whole thing. The rest is just practice.
If it goes wrong, you've always got the truth. Your back hurts, you're a new dad, and you're just trying to make it funny. That's not a bit, that's just life.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping this show running. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you've got a weird prompt of your own, send it to show@myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.